It is the Nailing It podcast. Thank you so much for checking us out. Thanks for listening once again. Series number two, chatting to business owners and those who just inspire us and can inspire you to do something better or do something you really want to do, and to kind of show you that you can do pretty much anything. You can run any type of business, from opening up a shop, a salon, a bar, a pub, a restaurant, or even an animal talent agency, which is what my guest today has done. Now, it's funny because this guest is someone I've known for a very, very long time. She looks younger than what she does when I first met her 20 years ago. Her name is Leila Flaherty. She is a Liverpool resident, honorary Scouser, and an animal talent agent, would you say, Leila?
That's what it is called, an animal talent agent. Yeah.
Tell us what your business is.
So, Urban Paws Agency is an animal talent agency. So basically, we supply animals for film, TV, commercials, pet food packaging, theatre productions, meet and greets. We specialise in pet influencers. So we basically cover all forms of media.
So any animal and any kind of production, really, you can set up?
Any animal within reason. Okay. As long as it's not, you know, in extinct... are going extinct or endangered or anything like that. But yeah, we can actually source like dangerous wild animals as well as domestic animals.
Unbelievable. We've got so much to talk about. The biggest thing and how to open this is to say the level you're at, when you think of an animal on TV, the first thing you think of is the Andrex puppies.
Yes.
You've done the Andrex puppies countless times.
Yeah, we have.
So you're the agent for the Andrex puppies.
Yes, that's correct.
That's kind of getting you instantly to top level tier, isn't it, in this field?
Well, when I first started the company, say 12 years ago, my business plan was all written up to kind of start small and, you know, make my way up to the top. But it didn't happen that way. We just went straight to the top straight away. And I remember I was so overwhelmed at the time, thinking like, oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I haven't got the animals, I haven't got the experience, but I just ran with it. Every day was a learning curve. It still is to a certain extent. But yeah, it was a case of trial and error, just trying to figure out what the hell I'm doing.
And you certainly have done that. And within 10 years, this is. So you started 2015?
Yes, that's, yeah, yeah.
Let's go back before that. We're going to talk a lot more animals in a bit. But before that, many people will have known you on the TV because you were in a reality TV show in Liverpool, Desperate Scouse Wives. Love or hate it, it was there. A lot of people watched it. What was your experience of Desperate Scouse Wives?
It was a very... I mean, at the time, I was really excited. I had just finished my degree in nursing and I was, you know, ready to kind of go straight into paid employment. And the opportunity for Scouse Wives came along and it was one of them, you know, Towie was big at the time and Made in Chelsea. They were the only two reality TV shows. And at the time, everyone was saying, you know, it was an opportunity not to miss. And I wasn't sure whether or not to do it, but I did. It was the backlash afterwards. After that first episode aired, it was, my whole world was just changed. It was just turned upside down. As well as like other cast members, we were all getting like verbally abused. I was getting racial abuse all on Instagram. I got glassed on a night out. I went to Asda one day to just do food shopping and someone spat in my face. So it really was a negative environment, a negative reaction. And I kind of get it because, you know, when you see reality TV, you expect everything to be real. But it wasn't. It was heavily, heavily scripted. And the character I was playing just didn't go down well.
See, it's funny because I, it's around the time I got to know you, I was working at Radio City and we go on a lot of nights out together and stuff. The character you played was so different to who you are in real life. And that's when you go, that's not real, because you are one of the sweetest people I've ever met. And I'm not just saying that.
Thank you.
It didn't portray you like that on TV.
No. So I was in a bit of a love triangle. Alyssa and Joe did have history together. And I was the third party that was chasing Joe, even though I had a boyfriend off camera as well for 6 years. But no one knew that. You know, so people, and I get it, people believed, you know, what they saw on the TV as gospel, but it was far from the truth.
What would you say to anyone thinking of doing reality TV? Obviously, it's come on since then. But, you know, what's your biggest take from that experience?
I mean, don't get me wrong. I love reality TV. Like, I'm a sucker for Married at First Sight and, you know, Love Island and all the rest. However, it has such a short shelf life. You know, you're popular for that moment. And then afterwards, I, for me personally, I felt like I was selling my soul to the devil just to stay relevant. And I just, it's not really, unless you've got talent, it's a very hard industry to stay relevant in.
You are now super successful with what you do now. Do you put any of that down to that experience or to... I don't, if I'm being honest, no. And I hope you don't mind me saying that, because no. I know you're a clever girl. Anyway, would you put any kind of, I don't know, anything you learned from that experience towards what you're doing now?
Well, what I, initially when I started Urban Pause, I had to keep my name away from owning the agency. I didn't want any recognition or any kind of blurred lines between the two. So a lot of people didn't actually know who was behind Urban Pause for many, many years. I kept the two completely separate. Or if I did an interview or anything like that, I never, ever brought up about Scouse Wives. So if anything, I kind of put Scouse Wives to bed, you know, dead and buried.
Yes.
And I started the business. Like, it was like a fresh start, really, for me.
Well, that's what we're going to do now in this podcast, because This is the exciting time now. Where do you come up with the idea? An animal talent agency. How do you come up with it? Where do you start the research on something like this?
Desperation. Because I lost my degree off the back of Scouse Wives. I was unemployable. I remember going into town one day for a job interview because we were all skint, you know, we needed to make money because, you know, you could be weeks in between a PA or, you know, a photo shoot. You need regular income.
You so were modeling as well, weren't you?
Yeah.
You had other things as well as the TV show.
Yeah, yeah. But I needed money to just to stay alive and everything else. So I remember going for an interview in town one day, and it was all over social media. I'd just seen that Scouse Wife going for a job, and like it was, you know, like it was something out of the ordinary.
Yeah.
And after that moment, because it was trending as well, and I just felt so embarrassed, like I was a failure. You know, even though we were just normal people that happened to get an opportunity to do a reality TV show, and then I'm being slated because I want to go back into normal life. So that was the kind of pivotal point for me where I thought, you know, my whole life I've always done like modeling. I now know how the TV industry works. I've always loved animals, you know, being an only child and growing up with animals. I'm from Ireland, you know, livestock and farm, They're everywhere. It's around us. So I kind of just had a little bit of a brainwave out of desperation. It was like, what do I do? So I kind of put my love of animals, that's always been there, you know, that's inevitable. And then I put my experience over the years, put all that together and just thought, what can I do with all three? And I kind of came up with this brainwave of why not start an animal talent agency? And at the time, there was only about four or five, and they were all based in London. They were all well-established, family-run type businesses. They weren't open to the general public. So that was the USB that I kind of clung on to. How can I make this accessible for everyone? And that's kind of how it started, just from a simple idea out of desperation, and I just ran with it.
And there are four, and as you say, in London, that's another massive USB, isn't it? That
massive, yeah.
You're out of London, you're up, you're still based now in Liverpool.
Yeah.
You've got the rest of the UK there, basically, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I have about 10 competitors now. You know, they're slowly popping up over the years. However, I spent a full year just analysing these well-established agencies to see what are they not doing or what can I do better. And that's what I did for a full year, where I kind of took a step back from the whole Scouse Wives thing. I needed time to myself anyway. I needed the headspace because I couldn't really go outside the door. You know, everywhere I went, people were recognizing me, and I just needed to get my head together. So I spent that time just studying them and just seeing how we can do things different. And I remember at the time, not many were very active on social media. So that was another USP.
Yeah.
And websites, you know, slow, old, weren't updating pictures. They weren't, you know, the branding wasn't there. There was lots of things where I thought I could do this and do it better.
Yeah. Yeah. Where do you start? How do you open the doors to something like this? I presume the website and socials are the first point of call, But then the actual process. And what was your first job?
Oh, first job was a film. I'll never forget it, actually. They wanted a staffy with one eye. And I thought, oh my God, where am I going to get a Staffordshire Bull Terrier with one eye and trained? But I did. I found it and I got it. And but I'll never forget when that job came in, because I was expecting something like a local business, you know, with dog collars and just something cute and you know, nice to start with. Mm. And it wasn't. It was a big film. And I was panicking at the time. I remember ringing my old agent, you know, my own personal agent, just to find out, like, well, what do I do now? You know, what's next? I literally did not know what I was doing.
So how did you find the staffy? This is a good way to show an example of what you did.
I think at the time I would used Instagram for like a casting call and just putting the word out there to friends, if anyone knows of anyone. And some woman got past to me. I can't even remember where she was from now, but she was a few hours drive away. And trying to explain to this woman that, like, we're an animal talent agency. No one's ever heard of that. And then trying to explain, you know, we're legit. You know, it's definitely happening.
It's not April Fool's Day.
Exactly, because we get that a lot. People, you know, when we approach them, they always seem to think, what, an animal talent agency? It has to be a joke. But, I ended up getting this woman. She kindly, I'm sure if I remember correctly, she declined the job after accepting it. Because again, she probably couldn't get her head around what was happening. And then I talked her into it again. She did it and she did a really good job. Yeah.
Wow.
It was the first job and I'll never forget, like, oh my God, I've done it. Because it took a good 6 months for anything to happen.
But isn't it crazy when you make your first sale, no matter how big or small that is, that makes you confident to go, God, this works.
Yes,
this mad idea actually works.
Exactly.
And it gives you confidence to grow then, doesn't
it? Yeah, yeah. 100%.
So is that what happened? You kind of then just thought, right, let's go.
Yeah. So we kind of, from that moment, that was a pivotal moment for me, because I had been focusing, as I said, on, you know, the smaller kind of, very small kind of businesses, you know, one man band type thing, where I was focusing on leads and collars and little things like that. So from then, I think that's when I joined LinkedIn and started adding production companies and casting directors. And my search then widened because I thought, you know, I can do this. I've done one. I can do this again.
Yeah.
And that's really kind of, it was a ripple effect from there.
What is the process like? And tell me if I'm digging too deep here, but
no problems.
Say the lady with the staffy or whatever, what cut do they get? Because I presume it's nowhere near as much as if it was a human agency.
Yeah.
So, because if someone wanted Georgie, for instance, to go and do a two-hour shoot, I'd be made up with a tenner. Do you know what I mean? But tell me how that.
So you're talking on average for a day rate, just your standard skills. So it could either just be, you know, the dog sat next to the family whilst on the sofa, your DFS adverts, or being walked on a lead, just very basic commands. You're talking a dog could earn about £1,000 a day.
Wow.
And we take 30% commission.
Oh my days.
Yeah, there's money. Oh, there's some animals on the agency books and that the owners no longer work because the dog or the cat is the main breadwinner in that household. So they're paying the mortgage, the two cars, they're paying for everything.
Georgie, get up and go and wash that face. We're going to work. That's unreal. So they earn a lot of money and they'll make careers out of that.
Oh, God, yeah. But these are your people now that are they're dedicated, like the animal, you know, they're in training morning, noon and night. They're still pets at the end of the day. They're still very much family pets and loved, but in terms of like the owners dedicate the whole life to training them, trick training, so they can do anything on set.
That's unbelievable. But I presume as well a lot of work goes into that too. It's like the dog owners who take the dogs to Crufts. That's a full-time job for
exactly,
that dog owner, isn't it? What's the maddest job you've had? I know you must get asked this all the time. Or give us a few examples of just different stuff.
Mad like crazy or mad as
just
in
like bizarre, just like, I never thought I'd be getting a tortoise.
We get asked a lot for animals that can hump a person's leg. And I never know why you would want to see that.
Yeah.
It's kind of a strange one. I'm trying to think what else. We got 101 Dalmatians. We needed to get 100 Dalmatians to walk the red carpet. So that was an all-nighter. Because obviously we wouldn't keep 100 of the same breed on the books.
And it's not just dogs, is it?
There's cats, dogs, rabbits. So we're coming into rabbit and chick season because coming up to Easter.
Okay.
So the animals change according to the seasons.
So reindeer for Christmas.
And huskies. We do Lapland every year as well.
Love this.
Yeah.
What animals, because obviously dogs and cats must be top.
Yeah, kind of, so it's dogs, popular. Dogs would be first, definitely. Cats would be the second choice of bookings. Then probably rabbits, birds, all your birds of prey.
It's the biggest animal.
The biggest animal I would probably say alpacas.
Okay.
Well, I mean, we can get dangerous wild as well, but in terms of regular bookings, yes, alpacas.
I suppose a dangerous wild animal comes with its own set of guidelines and rules. It's a completely different job altogether.
So after Tiger King, every other booking, well, potential booking was for tigers. So people don't realize, people think, we get a lot of requests from like rappers that want to hire a tiger. It goes with the ego, you know, the whole I look really tough kind of thing. But they don't realize that you can't just put a tiger on a lead and just walk around the streets of London with a big wildcat, essentially. So they have to be enclosed within a cage. So there's not much you can do with them. You can have them on camera, but in terms of how much you can film, they need to be behind an enclosed cage with handlers, and you're talking about 10 grand a day for a tiger.
Tell me about animal safety and health and safety and stuff, because we were talking earlier about shows like I'm a Celebrity, and that's kind of brought that really into the limelight, hasn't it?
Yeah,
even with the cockroach tasks they do, there's now measures in place to protect. Tell us how that all works.
So when we book an animal for a film or a commercial, whatever their job is, we will always have a vet on set there. So they will check the animal prior to filming, like a quick overall health check. They will be present whilst the animal's working. So if at any time they feel like the animal's been worked too much or they need a break, the vet will always step in. And then they'll check them again after they've finished. But we always follow the five code of conducts, you know, to make sure the animal's housed correctly and they have food and water and things like that. So we do follow all the correct guidelines. And as I said, we have the vet on set as well.
I'd say probably number one, just because I know what you're like with dogs and everything, is probably you and the love that you provide for the animals.
Yeah.
They will be your full attention, won't they, during anything. 100%.
And I always think to myself, you know, if I wouldn't do it with my own dog, I wouldn't expect someone else to do it. So that's kind of the way I look at things.
Do the owners ever jump in and...
So the owners will be on set with them. So they handle their own animals. Or sometimes we'd have trainers. Depends. Some people sign up their pets, but they don't know how to handle their own dog. So we'd have trainers that would do that for them.
Do you ever get like dance mums or football dads?
All the time. Where that's like... exactly how I describe them. Yeah. So you've got different types of parents, as I call them. So you have like, you know, the ones that wanted to be a model or actor themselves when they were younger, but never made it. So they're now channeling their own wishes through the dog. Or, you know, the kids are going to dance school, everyone's at activities, so the dog's involved. So we have all those different types. You have the pushy dance dog mums, and then you'll have the trainers that take things really serious.
Right.
And you have the regular mums that just want their dog to be famous.
Yeah.
So you've got all different types.
Yeah. I see. It's really warming to me, this idea now of Georgie being famous. Tell me about the Andrex puppies, because that must be a job that you're just like, wow. Because everyone knows and loves them.
It's probably the worst job ever. And I shouldn't say that. God. They're so fussy. Oh my God. It's like the tail is too long. The ears are too big. The body's too wide. There's always something. They look for perfection. So I think the last time I worked with Andrex, I must have sent about 400 puppies over to them, and every puppy there was something wrong.
Wow. Yeah, that'll be really special.
So it takes months to get them the right puppy. Yeah,
that is insane.
I know.
Some of the clients you've worked with, you were talking Adidas, and I know we'll be able to talk about some of them,
but
we're talking big global brands, aren't we?
Yeah, so like we work with all the fast fashion, you know, your Boohoo, Pretty Little Thing, then your high-end fashion like Stella McCartney, Gucci, Burberry, Balmain. We do all the supermarkets, Tesco, Lidl, Aldi, all your car adverts. Then we do a lot for Disney. We've worked with Rihanna. We've worked with Harry Styles. Yeah, we work with a lot of...
What
do a lot of Just
Eat. Rihanna need?
So Rihanna, actually, she really peed me off that day. She was 12 hours late, and I thought, that's so unfair to keep, whatever about the humans, but don't keep a dog waiting 12 hours. They've given up at that point. They're not going to want to do what they came to do by the time she gets there. But I remember being told by her team that it's very normal for Rihanna to be late. That's just Rihanna. And I thought, not on my time. It's not Rihanna.
Exactly,
not on my time.
See, that really annoys me, that. Like, we were talking about a singer who's coming to Liverpool this year, and apparently she's always late and everyone's expecting it to be like 90, and I'm like, why? We've all paid ticket money for that.
I think it's just they feel like they get too big, don't they, and they can act how they want to act.
Yeah.
And I just think it's so disrespectful.
Animals aren't like that.
No.
Animals will be there. They will be ready and stand to attention straight away.
Exactly.
tell me about the challenges that you face in a business like this, because it's so unique. So it's you know, and as well, anything can happen. You're working with animals for a start.
Yeah.
What are the biggest problems that you can face?
The biggest problems, so I suppose, I mean, with animals, they can break their tail, they can break a toenail, you know, they can lose their fur, they can get pregnant. There's always, and they unfortunately pass away as well. So we always have those types of challenges. You know, you could, someone could be out with their dog on a Sunday and have a shoot on Monday morning, and all it takes is a simple little accident, and that's it. They can't commit to the job on the Monday. I mean, and they're animals at the end of the day. Animals are like children. They have their off days. If they don't want to do something, you cannot force them.
No.
You know, and that's just simple. You can't force them. Thankfully, we've only ever really had two issues in my 12 years in business. We had cats on set once, and someone made a loud noise in the background, and the cat got startled and ran up the chimney. So the fire brigade had to get rang. And another job was for Little. I always say to people, don't overfeed the animal before a shoot so that they work hard for their treats. They obviously didn't feed the dog at all the day before. So when it got to the set, it was a picnic spread. So the dog just would not stop eating. I had the producer ringing me saying, Layla, you need to make the dog stop. I was like, what do you want me to do?
Yeah, because I can do that.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, in terms of the actual business side of what you do, I suppose this can be very complicated. There's contracts. There's just give us an insight into running an animal talent agency.
Yeah, so I mean, running an animal, it's there's a lot of admin. I would probably say a day we would probably get about 100 pet parents wanting to sign their cat or dog or rabbit up to the agency. So there's a lot in terms of admin, that side of things. But generally speaking, our day-to-day would be like, you know, liaising with clients, dealing with ongoing jobs, or just making sure the logistics are right. It's really it's about managing the client's expectations, you know, because they seem to think that, can we get this dog to jump through hoops of fire, then run down the stairs and, you know, cook breakfast for everyone? It's a dog. I'm sorry, it's a dog at the end of the day. Regardless of how well trained they are, you still need to manage their expectations. So a lot of it is about management, you know, managing clients' wants and wishes, etc., and seeing what best, you know, compromises that we can kind of come to in terms of getting the content that they need. I'm always booking hotels, flights, because we ship animals abroad as well.
Wow.
Or booking dressing rooms or whatever. It's, you know, just making sure that animal gets from A to B comfortably and safely, and they can perform to the best of their ability once they're on set. So it's just really about managing.
Will you always be with them? Will someone from your team? So no, sometimes it'll just be the animal and their owner.
Not always. We don't always turn up at every shoot, because since COVID, they have kept the numbers smaller on set. But sometimes if we can go to a shoot, we will do, yes. But the handler will always be with the dog.
So they'll always be
there. Yeah.
What is next? Where do you grow? How do you grow a business like this? Well, it, in fact, proof's in the pudding, because you have done. But are you planning to grow even more? You planning to take it overseas? What's next?
We're currently in an Urban Pulse in Ireland.
Okay, lovely.
So I have expanded over to Ireland.
Home.
Yes. The next step would probably, I'm always getting approached by an animal talent agency in Dubai. They haven't managed, we kind of started around the same time, we've always stayed in touch, but they haven't been able to grow it to the level that we're at. So if anything, it may be a collaboration with them or something, but I definitely would love to get over to the Middle East.
That'd be amazing.
I know.
Dubai would lend itself.
Yeah.
They could handle the tigers and stuff.
And they get a lot of like birds, bookings, camels, all things, you know, different animals to what we would book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can see that, and the money as well.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, that will be interesting, plus the free holidays.
I know.
I want an invite. Well, what would you say to anyone, Layla, who has kind of faced something that the position you were in after you did TV, you know, you felt like it was all finished and you didn't really know where to go. What advice would you give to anyone who's in that same predicament?
Well, at the time, I mean, after Scouse Wives, and when I had kind of come up with this idea, everyone was saying to me, it won't work outside London. You may as well forget about it. It's too niche of a market. I think if anyone was ever thinking about, you know, building a business or creating a business that is niche or that is different, to, you know, believe in yourself and to just to make sure that you do all your research, find the USPs, find that little gap in the market where you can kind of, you can, like what I did, I suppose, look at how I can do things differently and just believe in yourself and go with it. I think the more people that told me I couldn't do it, that made me more determined to make it happen.
I can see you hearing from someone like that and being like, nope, that's drove me on more. Was there any times when you thought this isn't going to work?
All the time. Yeah, all the time. And I think that comes with being a business owner anyway.
Yes.
You know, that self-doubt always creeps in every now and then, or when you have a quiet period, you think, oh, shit, that's it. Sorry for using bad language.
You can use bad language.
But yeah, no, it does happen. It does happen from time to time, 100%.
Can anyone, in your opinion, be a successful business owner?
I definitely agree with that statement. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, 100%. I mean, my friends always say to me every day, because I have a blonde moment every day. I can be quite dim in day-to-day life. But everyone always says to me, I don't know how you run a business.
Meet your mate.
But yeah. No, I do think anyone can run a business. Yeah. If you've got determination, you know, you've got that grit, you've got self-belief, I definitely think anyone can, yeah.
Listen, I love the bit of your story I love the most is that you turn such a negative and a kind of rough time in your life into something so incredibly unique, different and special as Urban Paws Agency. Where can we find out more? Where can we sign up? Where can we see some of the things that you're doing?
Yeah, so the website is obviously www.urbanpawsagency.com, and all our social media as well as at Urban Paws Agency.
And you are looking for more members to join the team?
Yeah, we're always looking. So we're really desperate at the moment for cats, trained cats. Not many people train their cats or realise that you can train a cat, but you can. So yeah, any trained cats or any breeders, puppies and kittens, breeders, by all means, get in touch.
Okay. And listen, follow her LinkedIn, Instagram, all your usual spots as well. Leila Flaherty, thank you so much. Keep going.
Thank you.
I can't wait to see, because every animal now we see on telly, we know is one of yours, basically, don't we?
9 times out of 10.
Claim them all. Leila, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.